Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, we have another Young and Restless, Bold and Beautiful crossover afoot. John McCook, who plays Eric on B&B, will appear again on Y&R as part of Sally's scheme to get rid of Summer. Now, John McCook, who plays Eric, actually got his soap start on Y&R in 1976, playing Lance Prentice, and he became a pretty big deal. So, like Don DeMont before him, it's kind of a fun wink to the audience to have him back on the show. Now, he won't actually be in Genoa City. Sally technically goes to LA to visit him, but it will still be a tune-in for sure, and you know I love a crossover. There's also some casting news to talk about. In the Days front, Greg Vaughn is heading back as Eric, and the show has cast an actor to play EJ and Sammy's son, Johnny, who is, of course, Allie's twin. His name is Carson Boatman, and he will make his Salem debut this summer.
What great news about Greg Vaughn. You know, I feel like the Eric and Nicole fans have really been through the ringer and that he has been sorely missed on the canvas. So it'll be so great to have him back. And I feel like there is a lot of story to tell with him. I'm also pleased that we'll see Johnny. You know, the show did such an awesome job casting his twin that I have very high hopes for Carson. And I'm definitely curious to know what Johnny will be like because he's such a blank canvas. Another bit of soap news making big headlines this week is that GH's Kirsten Storms, who plays Maxie, revealed that she underwent a scheduled brain surgery to remove a non-cancerous cyst that split in two and was putting pressure on her brain. So there's no word yet about how long she'll be recovering and away from work, or if her absence will require Maxie to be off camera for a while or even a temporary recast. But of course, the most important thing is that she is doing well, she's back to knitting, and she'll be back in the studio as soon as possible. And I have to say that she has been turning in some truly brilliant performances of late. And it is all the more impressive to me knowing that she was going to work and memorizing gobs and gobs of dialogue and executing the material so, so well, all the while dealing with the knowledge that she was going to be undergoing a surgery of this nature. We also confirm in the new issue that her leading man for the past few years, Wes Ramsey, is exiting GH. The character was declared to be without a pulse on screen after his big confrontation with Finn on the roof, and the fallout from that is going to be a big focal point of story moving forward for a lot of different characters.
Well, first of all, I'm very hopeful that Kirsten will make a speedy recovery. And I agree with you that it's amazing that she was able to pull off what she did in the past week or so of air shows, knowing this was going on. You know, as for Peter, I have to say, and certainly we've talked about this a lot, not on the podcast, but I don't know that it ever felt that there was a real solid plan for that character. You know, on paper, it makes a lot of sense, but it never felt like the show really committed to him being a villain, though he did shady stuff, which I feel kept him in this like purgatory of sorts. You know, I've always said to you that I don't like to be in the dark with characters or stories. I want to know who they are so I can figure out how to feel about them. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kept waiting for that with Peter. You know, do you remember when EJ came to Days and he was EJ Wells, a famous race car driver, and he was flirty with Sammy. And then we found out that he was Stefano's son. You know, similarly here, Peter came on as a media guy who turned out to be Faison's son. and Anna's. Oh, wait, Alex's. And then there was the disco ball ornament with the memory mapping flash drive. And then there was the tie to the bed months-long saga. The point is, you get where I'm going. You say all these things out loud, and it doesn't sound like there was a big through line here, which I think is critical when you're introducing someone new like they did with him in 2017.
Yeah, I think we were supposed to, like, root for him to find the light and what have you, but I think a lot of the audience was greatly unmoved by the idea of sympathizing with him, because whenever his house of cards was poised to crumble, he did things you can't come back from, like arranging for Drew's plane to go down. Obviously, more recently, he committed more murders. He killed Franco and the real Chloe Jennings to, you know, try to hold on to the happily ever after that he so badly wanted with Maxie. I think the show was intrigued with the concept of exploring a guy whose DNA had him be half WSB, half DBX, you know, as a metaphor for someone struggling between their villainous impulses and their desire to be a better man and worthy of the love of a good woman. But I think that the viability of the character was hampered not only by the murky who is this guy that you detailed, but also by how genuinely upsetting it was to a lot of long-term fans that the canon of the Anna Devane character was tampered with in such a huge way to accommodate the existence of a son with Faison. I think that was a mistake, you know, pure and simple, and that the efforts to undo it, which is how he ultimately became the son of Alex Devane and Faison, was too little too late. And a big takeaway for me as I think about the arc of that character and his years in Port Charles is that I think the show underestimated how much fans value the smarts of the female characters on the show. It was not entertaining viewing to me and to a lot of people, I think, to have Peter's continued existence on the show like rest on his ability to pull the wool over the eyes of savvy women like Anna and Maxie. Now, in the end, they did both see him for who he was, to paraphrase them, but I don't think it sat well with fans that Peter was able to outsmart them for so long. And, you know, yes, we've seen Maxie bamboozled before. She had that whole relationship with the despised Levi Dunkelman, who turned out to be not just like an insufferable blowhard, but also a villain who was targeting her for his own ends. But that was an arc that I do think was very confidently plotted and did have a plan from the start. And importantly, it was over and done with within a matter of months, not years. And two other things that story had going for it, I think, is that it didn't dominate the canvas like all of the tentacles of the Peter story did. And it was also told within the context of setting up the quite successful Maxie Nathan pairing, which gave it a lot of payoff when it ended and Maxie did get together.
Oh, I totally agree. And I know this is a very hot topic online, and it's interesting to see how more clunkery stories, if you will, play out on social media because there's such an immediate and constant feedback. And I just saw very few supportive tweets or comments about this whole Peter arc. You know, I give credit to Wes Ramsey, who has always been so accommodating with the magazine, because I can imagine that sometimes it's hard to walk that line when you're well aware that your character is not everybody's favorite. You know, not to say that he would necessarily say anything negative, but I always marvel when I go back into our old issues from the 80s, if you will, and see how people were so open in our interviews really before social media. You know, back in the day, you said something critical about the show and it died after the issue went off sale. Mm-hmm. Now it lives forever. It puts actors in a very different place. And again, this is not to say that they would complain, but if they did today, you almost feel like we're going to have a Jim Riley on Friends with Joey moment.
Absolutely. You know, I do think that the actors have been a little muzzled, shall we say, by how amplified their quotes are in the current age. You know, it's not just social media, although social media certainly plays a part. I also think, you know, it's other internet things, you know, so blogs and sites that, you know, isolate negative quotes and make independent stories out of them, which ultimately calls negative attention to the actor that was just trying to, like, keep it real for the fans. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that's created a culture in general of actors feeling like they really need to be careful of what they say, but it has certainly made our off the record conversations with these stars that much more juicy, I would venture to guess.
Oh, I can vouch for the fact that it has for sure. Well, our guest today stepped into the role of YNR's Nate in 2019 and has been a very welcome presence on the canvas in so many ways. It's Sean Dominick, so let's check in with him and see how his Genoa City journey is going so far. Hi, Sean.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good, Stephanie. Thank you for asking. How are you?
Good. We're so happy you could join us today. Neither are Mara nor I has ever spoken to you, so this is going to be eye-opening for everyone.
Okay,
so let's start. You were born in Madrid, Spain, where your mother was stationed in the Air Force, and you moved around a lot as a kid because of her job. So tell us about your childhood, you know, the various places you lived, and how often were you really picking up stakes and moving?
Oh, man. So we moved from Madrid. I was pretty much still a baby. I think it was, I think we were there for like a year when I was a baby. Came to the States. We first landed in South Dakota, very cold place. But I think for the most part, we were in places for like 3 years, like Spain, South Dakota, Florida, in the Panhandle, there for a couple of years, Maryland. We stayed a little more than 3 years. We were there for like 5 years. And then from there to Delaware. And then in between, there's some other places I stayed to. But like my mom went to Korea for a year. So me and my brothers stayed with my grandparents for a year. That was a rough year. I was like, I think it was sixth grade. No, fifth grade. I think it was fifth grade. And it was the worst school year I've ever had. Imagine your mom leaving you for a year and you with your grandparents. My grades were horrible. But and we spent time with my grandparents when she went to Desert Storm. Usually 3 years, I guess, we were in a place.
Did you have a favorite place to live, or was there like one that was hardest to say goodbye to?
Moving around so much and it happening to me at such a young age, it was never really hard for me. I was always excited for the new. My youngest brother, it was opposite for him because he grew up a little bit before he had to move, and he had made best friends. And it was tough on him. So, yeah, it wasn't hard for me at all.
Well, what was it like to grow up just as the son of a mother in the military and to see her go to Desert Storm?
Man, that was scary. I was trying to hide the tears.
Right.
I was trying to be a man. But, I didn't know what exactly she was going to do out there. But, you know, sometimes, you know, people don't come back. But, it was okay because, you know, we had a very supportive family. My grandparents, aunts, uncles, a lot of cousins who are like brothers and sisters to me, you know, so had a lot of support. And she was only there for like three or four months, so it wasn't too long.
Well, this was normal life for you, you know, all of this moving and starting over in a new place. Looking back, how do you think that shaped you? And do you think it factored in at all to, you know, you being drawn to performing?
I've been pondering this thought for a while. I don't know if I chose entertainment. You know what I mean? I think it chose me because I was always attracted to entertainment. I played instruments. First forms of entertainment was dancing and then playing instruments. And then music, plays, modeling. And I played sports, but I was more attracted to entertainment. And I couldn't tell you if that's from the moving around a lot. I don't know. But the moving around a lot helped me to it's much easier for me to meet people, read social cues, you know, sit back, watch, you know, come into a new place, you know, watch, you know, who's who, you know, all right, you know, all right, I can speak to this person. I can speak to this person, looks a little standoffish. Let me let them warm up to me type, you know. You know, watch all these social cues that you need to watch, as opposed to someone who's been in one place for a long time and hasn't moved somewhere else. And, you know, you get those people who just like bombard conversations. You're like, hey, who are you? I'm not one of those guys.
Everyone knows people like that. Well, you spent summers with your extended family, grandma and cousins, and rumor has it that Y&R was on in the background. So who were the Y&R fans in the family? And do you have any memories of watching it yourself when you were younger?
My uncle, man, I call his name out, my uncle JP. He was a postman. He was a mail driver. And so we would be in my grandma's. My mom would ship me and my brothers to my grandparents and summers. So from there, we would go spend time with cousins, like a stay over. You know, one of my favorite cousins to stay over his place, my cousin Corey Martin. We would stay over at his place a lot, and his dad would be away at work, and at noon would come home and have lunch and watch Y&R.
Amazing.
5 days a week. Watch Y&R. And I think I watched one or two episodes and got caught for like a couple of years. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, oh, what's, oh, I got to figure out what's going to happen now, you know? Got caught a couple of years and then grew up and then was doing other stuff. So I couldn't keep up with it.
So you spent really the entirety of your high school years in one place, which was Delaware. As you mentioned, this musical inclination that you had, you told Digest in your first feature interview with us that in high school, you were in gospel choir, the school chorus, playing instruments, and also in an R&B group. I need to know more about this R&B group. What were you called? Where did you perform? What was on your set list?
I didn't play instruments in high school. That was before.
Okay.
When I first got to my first year in chorus, there was a guy, his name is Aaron Washington, and he was looking for people to create a group with. And so I was one of the newest guys to get into his group. Aaron Washington, very few people may have heard of his name. This guy is one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, no jokes, I'm not exaggerating. He got picked up by Voiced Men, I think. Wow. And I don't know what happened with that. I think it fell apart or whatever, but it's one of the best voices I've ever heard. So got with him in 2 years. I think he graduated like a year or two ahead of me. And so like some of the older guys left, and then it was like guys in my age and a little bit lower, we formed a group, and it was called New Vibe. And New Vibe, we performed all around Delaware at different events and everything. And we performed at this one competition where if you won, you got a chance to go to Apollo Theater. And we won that competition, and we went to perform at Apollo Theater.
What was that like?
Yeah. Oh, man, it was scary. They could boo you.
Did you rub, like, the, isn't there something that you rub before you go on stage?
Yeah. Was it Steve Harvey hosting? I think it was Steve Harvey hosting, too. That episode didn't get aired. But they wanted us to come back and to perform to a live taping. But we had broke up after that. Like, not right after that, but we had broke up. Because two of us went off to college, and we still had a year. The rest of us still had a year left. It was five of us in the group.
Well, was music ever something you thought about pursuing, or was it just something fun to do?
Yeah, I thought about it. I just never thought I was I just never thought I was that good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, at the time I didn't comprehend you can get better. You know, I just thought you were what you were. If I knew a little bit better, I'd have probably, I would still pursue acting, but I would probably work on getting better as a singer, you know?
Are there any new vibe MP3s floating around that I can get my hands on?
There's some tapes somewhere. There's some tapes somewhere. And we had beautiful harmony. Beautiful harmony. We did, we sang a lot of Boys and Men stuff because we were all together in gospel choir and chorus.
Okay.
So we already knew each other. We already knew how each other sounded and we already had an ear, you know, so it was beautiful. I would love to hear it. I would love somebody to bring some tapes out. There's some tapes somewhere.
You gotta find them.
Yeah.
Come through, universe, because I would also like to hear those.
Now, after high school, you went to college at Delaware State, but you've said that your heart really wasn't in it. And by the time you knew you wanted to be in entertainment, but maybe didn't know quite how to go about it, you eventually dropped out and started modeling. So tell us how your modeling career came about.
Oh, man. It's hilarious. So at college, there was this girl I was trying to date and she wouldn't give me the time of day, but she said I should model.
Okay.
That makes no sense to me. But I took her advice. I did this model and talent search in Philly and, thinking, you go to a model talent search, there's like 50 plus different agents from the States and maybe some from overseas. I remember having a good time there thinking I'm going to have a couple that want to take me on. And I met a group of people and it was like, oh man, you're killing it up there. Like you do a walk for them and everything. And I ended up getting no callbacks, like nobody. And I was like, I came back to college and all my friends was like, yo, how'd it go? I said, yeah, I got, you know, two were interested. I don't know because they're so far.
good save.
Oh my God, yo, I had to pick my face up off the ground. Oh man, and then after two semesters at Delaware State, me and my cousin moved down to Atlanta, Georgia. And I just kept whisperings like, hey, you should model. You never thought about modeling? Like, you can model? And so I tried another model talent search. This is the only way I knew how to do it. Supposedly, all you just needed some great photos and just shot them around. But I did another model talent search. And from that, I got like 12 or 13 callbacks.
Wow. Nice.
And I got with one of the biggest, at that time, the biggest agent in Atlanta. And started working out the gate, man. I think one of my first jobs was like the biggest fashion show in Atlanta. I was just like, whoa, this is how it is. And I remember like everyone changing backstage in front of each other. It's like, oh, this is how it's going down.
When you think about like the modeling chapter of your professional life, what are some of the most like memorable gigs that you had?
There's so many. Because the most memorable gigs tends to be with the most memorable people because you meet so many people. Mm-hmm. One I can remember is when I booked a Timberland campaign and with another guy from New York. And we ended up being like really close. We call each other Ebony and Ivory. white guy. They flew us to not Martha's Vineyard.
Cape Cod, Nantucket.
Cape Cod. They flew us. So we flew to Boston and then they put us on this little tiny plane and we flew to Cape Cod. It was a scary, scary flight. I've never been in a plane where it moved like that, like that. So we got to Cape Cod. We were there for like 3 or 4 days and we're just filming like rugged Timberland stuff, carrying boats and putting fences in on the beach. And I had a birthday during that time, during us filming that, shooting that. And the crew was cool. Everyone was cool. It was just a really cool vibe. And they brought me out a birthday cake on my birthday, and we all celebrated and we all had dinner. It was amazing. It was an amazing time.
That's a good memory. Well, you lived in Georgia for a few years and then you moved to New York City. So tell us how that came about.
Me and a couple of model buddies was like, hey man, we need to step our game up. And we all, a couple of us decided to go in an apartment in New York and before we moved up there, we went to visit, and we had a friend staying off of Broome Street. Everyone got there before me. I got there midnight, September 10th, woke up to September 11th.
Wow. You're kidding me.
Yeah. Woke up to that.
And you were downtown.
Downtown. We were not too far. Not too far.
What was that like?
It was surreal. It didn't make sense. I wasn't thinking about lives lost or anything. It was just like the whole city just shut down. Mm-hmm. So it was like in my head, my young head, I'm like, all right, I just wasted money. there's no modeling agencies open. I'm like, golly, you know? And then it started setting in a little bit more when the dust and soot started coming up our way. We went to Times Square. I think we walked all the way up there. Didn't even feel like that long. Everyone didn't know what to think. It was interesting. I mean, we came back, and luckily we came back at a certain time because they was closing off that area downtown, and we didn't have driver's license showing that we lived there, so we would have never got it. And it was hard to get out. There were no cars available. No flights were taking off. All the rentals were gone. But one of my bud's friends got us a train ticket out of there. And it was a Thursday because September 11th happened. Was that a Monday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. So we got out on Thursday. And I remember being on the train, and this lady sat next to me. And I was like, man, she looks familiar. Who is she? I was like, I'm sorry. I know your face from somewhere. She's like, oh, I'm Judge Patchett. I run a syndicate show. I was like, Judge Patchett. So I look at her, oh! So I'm sitting next to Judge Hatchett. We took a picture with Judge Hatchett. I still got the picture somewhere. And she had the boogie out of there too. She got off in Philly, and we kept going down to Georgia.
Wow. I mean, that was 20 years ago. That's what's mm-hmm. so crazy.
Yeah, totally.
20 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you talked about that, I mean, I still remember the smell of the air that morning. You know, there's just like certain sense memories you don't forget about that day, and just how in shock everybody was when you saw them on the street. Like what a welcome to New York. Like that's really crazy timing.
I remember us walking, just walking around, and there was this lady crying in the street, and she was getting interviewed, and she was crying, and we stopped, and she was just bawling. She said, "I don't know, my brother was in that building. I don't know what happened." And then walking down the street, there was this man in suit, but he was covered in soot, just covered in soot, carrying a briefcase, walking like, you know, like in The Walking Dead, where the dead just, that's how he was walking. He was just walking like that. And she turned because he got closer, and she yelled out this shriek that you don't typically hear. It's like it's a scary shriek, but that was her brother.
Oh my gosh.
I got a picture of that somewhere.
That's crazy. And
it was just like, how are we here? Her getting interviewed and him walking down the street at the same time. How does that happen? And she was blessed. Her brother survived.
Wow.
For sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, how did you then make the move back, and how long did you wait before you came?
We came back. We moved back the next year. That shows you how eager we was. We came in August. Well, I came in August. They came a few months earlier than me. Came in August and hit the road running.
So let's talk about your experience in New York. Where did you live, first of all?
We first stayed in Clinton Hill. We were there when a lot of students were getting robbed. A lot of Pratt students were robbed. And then I moved to Williamsburg, and I stayed in Williamsburg the rest of my year. I was there like 17 years. Stayed in Williamsburg pretty much.
Wow.
Because I moved in Williamsburg twice, but I hate moving. I hate it. Oh, it's annoying. And if you find a good spot,
you got to stay.
If you find a good spot and it's affordable, it's hard to find something equivalent.
Yes.
If you find something equivalent, it's typically going to be more expensive.
Right. Story of my life. Well, you worked as a bartender at a comedy club, and you told Digest that you befriended some of the comedians you saw perform there, including Michelle Wolf, who's blown up in recent years. So tell us about that whole experience.
Man, it was amazing. It gave me a new outlook on entertainment and what I needed to do, because at the time I wasn't pursuing acting. I was coming off of modeling, and I was like, in this zone where I needed to transition to acting. But throughout modeling, I was taking acting classes, but I just never pursued it. And then being at this model club nightly, just seeing these young comics just go up every night, like, or try to get up, or just come to comedy club so they can make friends with the booking agent, the managers, the bartenders, the servers. Mm-hmm. Just be there every night because they know eventually someone's not going to show up, and that happened quite often. The comic just couldn't make it because there were so many comedy clubs in New York. A lot of comics could get up 6, 7, 8 times a night. So it was, I needed to see that too. I think I needed to see that to understand what I needed to do to hustle for acting, because you know the percentages of working actors, it's a tough business. It's really tough. And seeing people like Michelle Wolf, Jared Fried, Michael Che, Jay Farrow, some of the newer guys who are doing stuff, Monroe Martin, Reggie, Derek Gaines, Mark, what's Mark's last? All these guys, like some of these guys have Andrew Schultz. Like some of these guys went on Joe Rogan's podcast, and from there, Jesus Christ, their followers went through the roof. It's amazing to see. And I think when I saw it and I could touch it, it changed the game for me. And two people helped, Yamanika Saunders and I'm blanking on this girl's name, and she's going to beat me up. But a comic reached out to Yamanika to reach out to me about a show looking for a bartender. And that... still blanking on her name. So Yamanika hit me up. I was like, "Yeah, I'll go to the audition." And I ended up booking it. It was a show called According to Him and Her, and I did like 2 seasons for it. And that was fun because I worked with a bunch of other comics. Tiffany Haddish was on According to Him and Her. A couple other. I'm trying to think who. Yamanika was on According to Him and Her. Who else? A couple of comics. Mm-hmm. So from there, I was still bartending at the comedy club and then lost the job. And then that's when I started pursuing acting. Yeah.
So I'm curious because I think that earlier get on your resume, your first television appearance was like before you were even really going for it too, right? Which is on Royal Pains?
Yeah, I do. I did Royal Pains. Was it the first episode?
I think it was the pilot episode.
Yeah, I think it was the pilot episode.
Yeah.
I just got that it was like, it wasn't even really an audition. I just ran, I think I randomly went to an audition. And he was like, okay. And they just, and I got it, and I got it with another model actor friend, Chad Gittins, and a couple other guys who I knew in the industry. And we were just this guy named Truck. We were all, you know, ball players. And I had two lines on that. But I wasn't pursuing acting at that time. I was modeling, just trying to get my feet wet with what that was about. But that was fun though, man. We had a good time on that day.
I loved that show. And I definitely saw the pilot episode. Now, another ongoing television gig you had was on OWN's Greenleaf, playing the role of Jabari Johnson. So tell us about Greenleaf and getting that and just your whole run there.
That was a game changer. I'll try to bring you to that. Pushing and trying to be your best, acting classes and working really hard at it, even though you think people aren't watching, people are. And I had a friend, she wasn't even really my friend, but we were acquaintances, she was from that acting class. She booked a show in Boston, a movie in Boston, and they had lost their lead. And she was like, I know a guy in New York who I think would be good for this lead. And I don't have no credits. She just knew me from acting class. And I did a Skype interview with them. They liked it, the audition. They called me up because I was playing a cop, so they wanted to see my work with a gun. And got up there and blew them out the water and booked that. And so we filmed that a whole summer. And the same girl, she was like, I'm going to submit to agents and managers down in Georgia, because that's where the market is right now. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. So from her, I got an agent in North Carolina, because I submitted Maryland's agency. And my fourth audition with them was Greenleaf. And I remember submitting it really late. And I had a singing part on it too. And I forgot, and I had to wake up like 2 a.m. to put that on there and then submit it. And the next day, I'm going to acting class, and I get a call right before I'm walking in, and it was my agent. She was like, hey, Sean, Greenleaf would like to see you tomorrow. They want to do a director session. And I was like, I'm in New York. You think I should fly to Atlanta tomorrow? She was like, yeah, I think so. She was like so casual with it. She's like, yeah, I think you should. I was like, oh, okay. So I went in acting class, and I'm like trying to like look for flights while I'm in acting class. Flew down the next day. Luckily, I had some friends down there because I used to live there. So flew down, stayed with some friends, and went and did the director session. And I remember going in, and the director was in there, and he was like, hey, go get so-and-so. I was like, oh, he's trying to show me off. Okay. You want to show me off? So, no, I'm sorry. No, was it director? It was a director session. And so went in there, did my thing, then hit my agent up the next day, and it was like, we want him to do a chemistry read next week. And the chemistry read was the day of us voting for the president, which Trump came in office that day. So I went and did the chemistry read, and flew back to New York the next day. And my agent was like, you booked Greenleaf. And from there, did Greenleaf. It was a recurring role. You know, recurring is, who knows, but like I ended up doing like 13 episodes of a 16 episode season, you know?
That's great.
So as your profile starts to grow as an actor, 2019 was a huge year for you career-wise, because you landed the role of Nate on Young and the Restless. So yeah. Tell us your whole YNR casting story.
I'm making trips back and forth from New York to LA, coming out here for like a few weeks, you know, seeing if I can get auditions. here and there, I had some auditions. And then I came out for my, it was my first pilot season, February 2019. And I came out here the second week of February. And I was here for 3 weeks. And I had a couple auditions. And then Young and the Restless was one of my last ones. And I went in and auditioned, got back home. That same day, I think, they was like, hey, they want you to come in and for a callback. And I was like, okay. So I went in for a callback, and it was like the callback, it was for the role of Nate. It was me and four other guys, and they were also casting Adam. And I keep talking to Mark Grossman. I'm like, I don't remember seeing you there. I remember all the other guys, but I don't remember him for some reason. And so I went in, and they had Melissa reading with me at the time, who became my first love interest. And she was amazing. She acted like she was on set. Like, you know how some people could probably take it like, all right, I gotta read my, but she gave me everything I needed, and I attribute much of my performance to her because she gave me a lot. And I remember just sitting there on stage after we were done, and everyone asking questions, and there were some smiles in there. I was like, huh, you know, in Hollywood, don't take that too far, but. I was like, oh, they may have liked it, you know, but there's all kinds of other things that you can't control that they could book someone else for whatever. So I went home, and that night after, they was like, so how much longer are you here in LA? I was like, oh, I fly out tomorrow. And so I went back home, and I got a message saying, don't leave yet. And then I think maybe later that day, I booked it. I think it was later that day, they told me. And I was like, whoa, what? It was contract role. I was like, ooh. I think I first called my mom, and then I called my closest friends. And I was like, they want me to start shooting next week? Like, all my stuff is in New York. You know, my bills, everything is in New York, so... It was an interesting transition. That first year was just me transitioning here to LA. Move all my stuff here to LA. From New York to LA. But it was surreal because I've got friends in this business who've been going at this for a long time. And it's just like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
But many of those friends, I think once you go at this for too long, not too long. I think once you go at this for a long time and it's constant disappointment, you start to have a negative attitude towards it. Mm-hmm. Not everyone, but quite a few. And I'm just felt blessed to, you know, book it, you know.
Right.
I know that, you know, I don't take it lightly.
And it was a show that you knew, that you were familiar with.
It's weird. Yeah, it was like, but my mom just like, 2 months ago, it was like, you know what's crazy? My son is on Young and the Restless. It's like, my son is on Young and the Restless. I can't wrap my mind around that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
So sweet.
The whole family pretty much watched Young and the Restless. One time in their life. So I remember my grandmother's 90th birthday. Was it last year? Last year, the year before. No, a year before last. And the family had a birthday party for her. And so my aunt was arranging it. She was like, Sean, you coming, right? So I get to the birthday party. All these people I ain't never seen before in my entire life are at my grandma's birthday party. I walk into this birthday party. They rented out a space. And there was cameras and everything clicking. Everyone pulling me to the side, take pictures. I was like, are they here for me or for my grandma?
That's awesome.
It was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Hilarious.
Now, when you took over as Nate, it was a difficult time for the show because Christoph St. John, who played Neil, your character's uncle, had recently passed away. So what was it like taking part in the emotional episodes surrounding the death of his character really so soon after you joined?
Man, that was tough. There was no acting that week. It was all real. You felt it in the room. Even like I just absorbed what everyone else was feeling, you know, to fuel my lines, because you know Nate was staying at his place. You know, they had a relationship. Yeah, it had been nice to meet him, because acting wise, there's not many who can hold a candle to Christoph. But it was nice to meet all the cast, all these cast members, you know, who came back for the show that week. Shamar, a couple of the names, I don't remember the names, but it was tough, but it was tough.
Well, let's talk about some members of your YNR family within the larger YNR family. So your character's cousins on the show are Devon and Lily, played by Brighton James and Crystal Khalil. So tell us about working with the two of them.
I don't work with Crystal a lot, you know? It's fun to work with her, but I don't really work with her much, but I love her. You said Brighton too? Brighton, love working with Brighton. Brighton, open arms first day, you know? Because, you know, some people could be like, all right, you're on my set, newbie. it's been brotherly from the first day. Him, you know, Michelle Morgan came back. Michelle Morgan, we like this, you know. Love working with her, even though I don't work with her much. Brittany, amazing. Love working with Brittany. Brittany gives me so much. Love working with Melissa. Everyone I worked with, man, I honestly have to say, man, it's a great set. Like, Greenleaf was an amazing set. This is an amazing set. Like, two for two, lucky. Like, I got to knock on some wood. I hear some sets can be tough. Mm-hmm. I was talking to my acting coach, and he used to be on a soap back in the day. I can't remember which soap he said. I probably shouldn't say it anyway, but he was on some soap, and he said the energy was horrible there. He was like, no one liked anyone. No one hung out with anyone. It was just rough. And he was on it for a few years. I was like, yo, well, that's total opposite of what I'm dealing with. So,
as you mentioned, Nate and Abby were together, but their pairing was short-lived. And then things took a real turn when Nate had that surprise one-night stand with Elena, played by Brittany. So just tell us about, you know, working with her and that shift and what you thought when you saw it in the script.
You saw it coming. We saw it coming a mile away. So I didn't think too much of it, but I was like, man, they didn't give me and Abby any time. You know, it was just like, hi, bye, you know. Melissa was like, hey, when are you coming back, Nate? Because we had such a fun time working together. But it was interesting because Brighton and Brittany together, you know, so I'm like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. I don't know how couples deal with this stuff. I would hate to be dating somebody on a soap opera, and you know they're going to be with somebody else eventually. But professionals, man, professionals. And the love scene happened during COVID. So you saw how they played with the tricks and the lighting and the shadows, you know.
Right.
My head changed in the shadows. It was a different head.
It happens. You know, COVID. So what is your take on the current status of Nate and Elena? You know, do you think there could be a bona fide future there? Do you think there's potential? What's your take?
And there better be a bona fide future. Sheesh. That girl's been through a lot. That girl's been through a lot. We need some settling, some clearing off the dust. I think there's definitely a future. I think we need to, I would love to build a huge storyline with her, you know, just to cement us on the show, you know, and have this history. Like, people look back, oh yeah, I remember that. Not like a fly by night history, but like, I would love to like have a cemented history. Christoph Shamar, Drew, I'm using character names and real names, I'm sorry. Drew, Olivia, Neil, and Malcolm. Mm-hmm. Like, they cemented their legacies on the show. And I would love for us to do that. And Brighton and Michelle to do that, you know. I hope they don't tear us up quick, you know.
Well, I don't know. When I saw those Nate and Imani scenes, there was kind of a flirty vibe there. So what do you think Nate makes of her? And tell us about Leanne Rose.
What do I think Nate thinks of her? Well, first, Leanne Rose is an amazing work with. Love that she's there. Nate knows she's attractive. Nate playing stupid though. Nate playing stupid right in front of Elena. Right in front of Elena. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, when he's not, you know, having his romantic relations, Nate is, of course, Genoa City's go-to medicine man. Yeah. So do you like playing a doctor, or is it sort of like a burden to have to deal with like all of the medical jargon that goes with that?
It's a little scary because, you know, there's a lot of medical jargon, and it's not the easiest thing for me. It's so like, and like, you know, we're not like Grey's Anatomy where we're like having a ton of prep and, you know, and going over lines like this. Here we go. Let's do it. You know, so it's challenging, but I take the challenge and I enjoy it. It lets me work with other cast members I don't see as much. But yeah, like when they put in that medical stuff, I don't know, I'm doing like a lot of research. Doing a lot of research. All right. How do you say this? Oh, all right.
Do you know, I have to tell you, I think you have really mastered the long pause that soap operas require of the doctor when they're like, how did the transplant go? And you have to like hold the look of drama because you're not going to tell them till the next scene. I see you. I see you doing that very nicely.
I'm trying.
Now, we really loved the recent tribute episode to Neil, which Nate took part in, of course. You know, as you speak of cementing, you know, your legacy on the show, what does it mean to you to be part of this legacy family, the Winters?
It's a big deal, man. It's a big deal. It's big shoes to fill, which will never be filled. But, you know, if we could add to those shoes, you know, bring in some more shoes that are comparable, and the fans accept it, that'd be amazing, you know. I recently looked at some of Christoph's old stuff. I'm like, how are any of us going to be that? Like, God, oh my gosh, dude. I mean, you know, he's been acting since he was a child, you know, I get it. But good gosh, man, that dude was a powerhouse.
Yeah,
he was. A powerhouse. He should be more known, mm-hmm. Honestly, more known.
Agreed. Honestly.
Like I look at his acting on a level of, he's up there with the Cheadles and Denzels and Jeffrey Wrights. Mm-hmm. He just stayed in daytime.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely.
Yeah, like, and I don't even know if some of those cats could do what he done on a soap.
Good point. I doubt it, actually. I think also that's an impossible transition to some extent to go probably from feature film and the way it works to doing a soap opera and the way, especially they work now.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we ain't got what? We don't rehearse? What? Yeah.
We're doing how many episodes a day?
Yeah.
Well, I was curious to know, since you've been on the show for a while now, if you've had any memorable stories of being recognized in public, and I'm not going to count Grandma's 90th as a public event or a public space.
I told these two stories already, but it was when I was in New York. A lady recognized me in the grocery store. She came up to me and she was like, it was funny because I think I had a jacket on, a hat, some sunglasses. Because I think it was chilly. It was cold in New York. It was in the wintertime. And she's like, she tapped me on the shoulder. She's like, excuse me, you don't play Dr. Naylor in The Restless. And I was like, yeah. And she just chatted me up. And then she ended up putting something on Facebook about the experience. Thank God I wasn't an a-hole. I think that same day or the day after, I was at a coffee shop with a friend, and this lady was sitting next to us, and she was like, "You, Dr. Hastings, on your list." I was like, "Oh, I come to New York, and that's what people recognize me. No one knows me in LA. They just keep, or if they do know me, they're like, ah."
You got too many celebrities out there in LA. You got that's why you come to New York and you're with the people and they really see you.
Exactly.
But see, in that moment in the coffee shop, were you like, was I talking about storyline? Would she overhear?
No, I wasn't talking about a storyline. I was catching up with a friend. I remember on Greenleaf I was getting recognized a lot too. Mm-hmm. Especially when I went down to like North Carolina or Atlanta, I got recognized a lot. Yeah.
That's great. Well, now that you're not a newcomer anymore, is there anything you wish the Sean Dominic that walked into Y&R on that first day had known about where his journey on the show would take him?
If you watch enough soap operas, you can assume where, you know, what you're going to be doing. Nah, I think it was good. I didn't know. You know, there's a beauty to that. And there's a great, you know, what's fascinating is, you know, no one holds your hand. You come on that set professionally. And I remember I didn't know anything. I was like, all I knew was my lines. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where my rooms were. I like all these places to go with set. You know, I would just watch people and follow. I guess it's the military brand in me.
The observer.
Yeah. So there's it's interesting. It's just a well-oiled machine, and you jump in and you better oil yourself and just flow. Go with the flow and figure it out as you go.
Yeah, soaps are very sink or swim, for sure. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that you've changed as an actor since you first started playing Nate?
Oh, man. My learning lines game has increased tremendously. Like, I'm even fooling myself sometimes. I'm like, I'll go over my lines. I'm like, do I already know that? No.
I'm amazing.
I'm amazing. Yeah, I'm like, you wouldn't know that? How do I know that already? But yeah, you train that little, I don't know if it's short-term memory or what, but learned a lot. And it's amazing to typically be on set every week. That's what I like about comedians. They can go out on stage every night if they want to, every night, 7 days a week. And as an actor, you don't have that unless you're in a soap opera or unless you're in a continuously running play. And so it's an experience I wouldn't trade, you know, because I'm learning so much. You learn so much about yourself. You know, you can take all these acting classes, you can do all this stuff you want, but until you get on set, you don't know how you're going to put up that all together, you know? And it takes a lot, you know. I couldn't even, I don't even know if I can put into words how much I've learned. Mm-hmm.
Well, before we let you go, is there anything you want to say directly to the YNR fans who have followed you since day one as me?
Fans, thank you for getting me to 10,000 followers on Instagram. We just reached that yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
Congratulations.
And it helped with Michelle Morgan's post. She had reached 100K followers, and she posted it. And then I went on her post, and I was like, hey, I'm not too far behind you. I'm almost at 10K. And then from that post, I got like, because I was like at 40 followers away from 10,000. And from that post, all these people was like, oh, I didn't even know I wasn't following you. So I got a bunch of followers from that, from me just posing on her post. Keep watching, keep rooting for us, keep rooting for Hastings storyline, Hastings Winter storyline. Push for me to get my house finished because it's been under construction for 2 years. Me and Brittany need to go somewhere instead of Lola's place, a hotel. just keep watching, keep rooting for us. Stick with your favorite actors through the thick and thin. Follow the journey. You know, it's a tough one, but we're constantly pushing to be better in this art form and to bring the best to you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And, you know, we certainly hope to see you in more story and have more reasons to put you on the cover of Soap Opera Digest, which you have been on since your debut.
Yeah, I got one. Do y'all ever put one person by themselves?
Occasionally.
All right, we're going to have to work on that.
Hashtag goals. I mean. Well, this was so much fun getting to know you, and thanks so much for all your time today. We hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, ladies. You have a great day.
Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye, Sean.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Sean Dominic for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.